Welcome. Welcome to the Deep Dive. I'm Jordan Thomas, your guide. And today we're tackling a challenge that definitely keeps federal leaders awake at night. We're diving deep into this really complex digital threat landscape. You've got nation-state adversaries, transnational criminal groups, and let's be honest, a persistent shortage of skilled cybersecurity folks creating, well, unprecedented pressure. It's a lot to navigate, right? But we're here to help you cut through some of that noise and to make sense of it all. I'm joined by our expert.
Thank you. I'm Taylor Adams, and yeah, I'm ready to really unpack this critical subject with you. The stakes for federal cybersecurity and, frankly, mission assurance, they've never been higher. Understanding how agencies can not just defend but actually accelerate their vital missions, well, that's paramount today.
Absolutely. And the title of our deep dive today, it lays out our mission pretty explicitly. Why the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the U.S. Department of Justice, and other federal civilian agencies need to adopt Rapid7 to secure and accelerate speed to mission. Our goal for you, our listener, is to give you a really comprehensive, granular report. Think of it as a shortcut to being truly well-informed on this specific subject. We're going to unpack why Rapid7's unified platform seems uniquely positioned to help federal civilian agencies like DHS and DOJ not just meet, but hopefully exceed their cybersecurity mandates. We'll look at the what, the why, and the how of securing these critical federal networks. And here's where it gets really interesting. We're also going to put Rapid7 head-to-head with major incumbents. We're talking Tenable, Qualys. We'll examine the strategic plays that could drive adoption. So yeah, get ready to dive in.
Okay, so to really appreciate the potential power of a comprehensive solution like Rapid7, we first have to grasp the sheer gravity of the problem these federal agencies are up against. We're at a critical inflection point in federal cybersecurity. It's largely driven by an evolving and, frankly, increasingly aggressive threat environment.
Evolving and aggressive. Okay, can you paint a clearer picture of that threat landscape? What exactly are we up against, and why does it feel so much more intense right now?
Certainly. Let's start at the top, with the most sophisticated and, you know, dangerous threats. Nation-state adversaries, and what we call advanced persistent threats, or APTs. These aren't typical one-off attacks. They're persistent, highly advanced, multifaceted campaigns. You look at executive orders, intelligence reports, they consistently identify the People's Republic of China as, quote, the most active and persistent threat to U.S. national security. But Russia, Iran, North Korea, they also represent significant ongoing dangers. What makes these APTs so challenging is their objective. It's not always about a quick smash and grab for data. These are often long-term campaigns. We're talking espionage, disrupting critical services, intellectual property theft, sometimes even outright sabotage of infrastructure. So to counter this, agencies need security solutions that go way beyond traditional signature-based detection or just, you know, perimeter defenses. They require capabilities like behavioral analytics, deep threat intelligence, things that can spot the subtle, sophisticated indicators of these intrusions before they escalate. It's a very different ballgame than just blocking known malware.
Right. So it's less about a quick hit and more like a sustained, stealthy operation trying to stay hidden. And you mentioned a blurring of lines earlier.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly when state actors and criminal actors sort of intersect?
Yeah, that's what's truly fascinating and also deeply concerning. This increasing convergence of state and criminal cyber actors. It's a defining challenge, really, for both national security and law enforcement. We're seeing adversary nations leveraging criminal proxies, almost like a tool of state power. Sometimes they allow government hackers to, well, moonlight as cyber criminals, or they just turn a blind eye to ransomware and other financially motivated crimes happening within their borders.
Okay.
This blurring makes attribution incredibly difficult. An attack that looks like straightforward criminal extortion could, in fact, be a state-sponsored operation, maybe testing defenses, doing reconnaissance, or just causing disruption. And this puts immense pressure on DHS components, think U.S. Secret Service, ICE, and also the DOJ's FBI. They're the ones tasked with investigating these transnational criminal organizations that threaten our national and economic security.
Yeah.
It completely transforms what might seem like a simple cybercrime into a potential national security incident.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare for attribution and makes responding even harder. And these federal departments, they're massive, right? The sheer size and complexity must be a huge challenge in itself.
Oh, absolutely. The scale and environmental complexity are just monumental hurdles. Federal departments operate some of the largest, most intricate IT environments on the planet. Their attack surfaces are vast.
Yeah.
You've got everything from decades-old legacy systems humming away in on-premise data centers.
Right, the old stuff.
To rapidly expanding multi-cloud deployments, and even a growing number of operational technology, OT, and industrial control systems, ICS, that manage critical infrastructure. This kind of hybrid complexity inevitably creates dangerous visibility gaps, and adversaries are constantly trying to exploit those gaps. Without a unified, comprehensive view across all these disparate environments, security teams really struggle with accurate asset inventories, rapid vulnerability identification, detecting threats that move laterally, say, from a cloud environment back into an on-prem system.
Yeah, that lateral movement seems key.
It is. And modernizing IT while ensuring it stays secure, often with pretty limited budgets, that's just an ongoing core challenge for everyone.
And then layered on top of all of that, we constantly hear about this severe shortage of cybersecurity talent, particularly in government. How does that factor into this already complicated picture?
It's pervasive and, frankly, debilitating across the public sector. There's a severe, persistent shortage of cybersecurity talent. It's acknowledged by industry, by government. Everyone knows it's a problem. Budget constraints, the difficulty competing with, you know, lucrative private sector salaries. It makes it incredibly tough for agencies to recruit and then retain the staff they need for a true 24/7 defense.
So the teams they do have are stretched thin.
Exactly. This workforce gap means existing security teams are often completely overwhelmed. They're spending most of their time on manual reactive tasks, chasing down alerts, generating compliance reports, rather than engaging in proactive threat hunting or implementing strategic security improvements. This creates a really powerful, urgent business case for solutions that provide what we call force multiplication.
Force multiplication.
Yeah, we're talking about intelligent automation, advanced analytics, operational efficiency, things that allow agencies to achieve a more robust security posture with the existing stretched personnel they have. It's about doing more, hopefully much more, with less.
Okay, so we've got these incredibly sophisticated, stealthy attackers. We've got lines blurring between state actors and criminals, massive, complex IT environments with blind spots, and not enough people to defend them all. That paints a pretty stark picture. But it's not just about the threats coming in, right? The federal government has also responded with its own demanding framework of mandates and requirements. That's exactly right. The federal government hasn't just sat back. It's responded with a clear, but yeah, undeniably demanding mandate structure to try and address these threats head on. One of the primary catalysts for this whole transformation is Executive Order 14038, entitled Improving the Nation's Cybersecurity.
Yeah.
And this isn't just a set of, you know, suggestions. It mandates government-wide endpoint detection and response, EDR, capabilities. It calls for centralized and standardized logging, which the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, fleshed out in Memorandum M2131. It also strongly pushes agencies towards adopting a zero-trust architecture. And it places significant emphasis on software supply chain security, requiring things like software bills of materials, SBOMs, and secure development practices. The core insight here, I think, is that this executive order signals a profound shift. It's moving beyond simple compliance checklists.
Right, the old check-the-box mentality.
Exactly. It's demanding genuine security investments that lead to measurable risk reduction. It even called for removing some of those burdensome attestation processes. It's really about achieving real, demonstrable security outcomes, not just, you know, proving you bought a tool.
And if those executive orders set the broad strategic direction, then you can think of the OMB memoranda as providing the detailed, actionable blueprints. Take M2209, moving the U.S. government toward zero-trust cybersecurity principles. This is arguably the most impactful cybersecurity memorandum of the last decade. Seriously. It lays out a very detailed zero-trust architecture strategy and roadmap organized around five critical pillars: identity, devices, networks, applications and workloads, and data. Now, the success of this whole strategy hinges on an agency's ability to achieve, and I quote, full visibility into their assets and business processes. And then this is key: integrate this information to create a comprehensive real-time picture of their attack surface.
So visibility isn't enough. You need to connect the dots.
Precisely. And this is exactly where standalone vulnerability scanners fall critically short. They might give you one piece of the puzzle, like a health check for a single device, maybe under the devices pillar, but they simply cannot deliver the cross-pillar correlation or the continuous context-aware access decisions that are the absolute hallmark of true zero trust.
Okay.
Then you have M2131, improving the federal government's investigative and remediation capabilities. This one operationalizes the logging requirements from EO 14028. It establishes a maturity model for event listing and mandates the collection of specific log categories with tiered deadlines. This puts, frankly, immense pressure on agencies to deploy or modernize their security information and event management or SIEM solutions. It makes SIEM a top budget priority.
And at SIEM, just for our listeners, that's like the central hub for all security logs, right?
Right.
Helping spot patterns.
Exactly. It collects and analyzes all your security logs from across the environment, helping you spot patterns, anomalies, potential threats. And finally, you've got the annual FISMA guidance, things like M2504, M2404. These serve as the primary reporting and accountability mechanism back to Congress. Increasingly, this guidance emphasizes continuous risk management over just ticking compliance boxes. It forces CISOs and CIOs to seek quantifiable metrics and demonstrate a truly proactive security posture to show tangible improvements year over year.
So it's this cascade of mandates, from the high-level executive orders down to really specific operational guidelines. And then CISA directives, they fit in as the tactical enforcement arm, is that right? They're the ones saying, do this specific thing by this specific date.
Exactly. Think of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, as being empowered to issue binding operational directives, BODs, and also emergency directives, or EDs. These apply to all Federal Civilian Executive Branch, or FCEB, agencies, which includes most components within DHS and DOJ. And let's be clear, these aren't optional guidelines. They are strict mandates with often very aggressive deadlines.
Super aggressive sometimes. Right. Like ED 2502 required immediate action on a specific Microsoft Exchange vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
BOD 2501 mandates agencies align their cloud environments with CISA's Secure Cloud Business Applications baselines. The rapid issuance and these really short compliance windows make manual approaches to vulnerability management or configuration assessment just untenable for large federal departments. Think about BOD 22801. That specifically focuses remediation on known exploited vulnerabilities, KEVs. These are the ones actively being used in attacks right now.
The highest priority ones.
Exactly. And the mandate is to fix critical ones within 15 days. 15. And then BOD 2301 requires weekly asset discovery and biweekly vulnerability enumeration across all networks. You just cannot do that manually at the scale of DHS or DOJ and expect to hit those deadlines consistently. It's impossible.
And underpinning all of this, you have the foundational frameworks, especially from the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST. The NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0, CSF 2.0, serves as that common language and methodology for risk management. It's understood across government, industry, even internationally. The latest version, 2.0, introduces a brand new sixth core function, govern. This really emphasizes establishing and monitoring the organization's cybersecurity risk management strategy and, crucially, integrating it into broader enterprise risk management.
So cybersecurity isn't just an IT silo anymore.
Not at all. The core insight here is that cybersecurity is now recognized as a fundamental mission component. It requires executive oversight, strategic alignment. It's a boardroom issue. And this shift strongly supports the adoption of a unified platform, something that can provide leadership with a consolidated, real-time view of cyber risk, but specifically in the context of their agency's mission. The other functions, identify, protect, detect, respond, recover, they form this continuous cycle that profoundly favors a holistic, integrated platform over just a collection of disparate, disconnected point tools.
Okay, so bringing all of this together, these incredibly sophisticated threats, the overwhelming complexity of federal IT, the talent shortage we talked about, and then this absolute avalanche of demanding prescriptive mandates. It really leads to one inescapable conclusion for me. It's not just about having security tools anymore, is it? It's something more fundamental. No, it's absolutely not. The inescapable conclusion when you put all those pieces together is the absolute non-negotiable need for an integrated, automated platform. The convergence of these advanced threats and these demanding mandates means government policy itself is actively evolving. It's moving away from simply requiring compliance checklists.
Checking the box.
To demanding genuine security investments that produce measurable risk reduction. You see this clearly in how EO 140-28 was modified to remove some of those burdensome attestation processes. Agencies are under intense pressure now to move beyond just proving they have a tool that addresses a line item in some regulation. They have to demonstrate a comprehensive understanding of their attack surface, accurately prioritize risks based on real-time threat intelligence and actual mission impact, and crucially, reduce their exposure in a timely, auditable way. The core insight here is that this requires a platform. A platform that unifies all that disparate security data, vulnerabilities, active threats, asset criticality, user behavior into a single contextualized view of risk. The vendor value proposition must shift. It has to go from we help you comply with mandate X to we provide the unified visibility and the risk context you need to achieve the actual security outcomes mandated by X. This positions a vendor as a strategic partner in managing risk, not just a supplier of point compliance tools. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's about outcomes, not just inputs.
Exactly. And the second inescapable conclusion is this. The relentless operational tempo dictated by those CISA directives, combined with that persistent cybersecurity skills gap, makes automation a mission-critical necessity. It is no longer a nice-to-have for improving efficiency. It's fundamental.
Okay.
When a CISA directive mandates fixing a known exploited vulnerability across, say, hundreds of thousands of endpoints within a 14-day window, manual processes will inevitably fail. There's just no way. The entire process, finding all affected assets, prioritizing them, creating and tracking remediation tickets, deploying patches, verifying success, it's impossible to execute that at scale and speed without a high degree of automation. Therefore, a security orchestration, automation, and response SOAR capability isn't just another tool for the Security Operations Center, the SOC. It is a fundamental requirement for an agency to meet its legal obligations and effectively defend its networks. Every strategic conversation with federal agencies must highlight how automation directly enables their ability to comply with the law and secure their mission. It's truly the only way to genuinely achieve that speed to mission in today's environment.
Okay, so given this critical, almost overwhelming need we've just laid out, let's turn our attention to the Rapid7 Insight platform. It seems engineered, really, as a unified solution precisely for mission assurance in this complex federal landscape. And a truly foundational element here is the InsightGovCloud platform itself, which achieved a FedRAMP authorization to operate, or ATO, at the moderate impact level back in July 2025.
FedRAMP authorization. Okay, that's a pretty big deal in the federal space, isn't it? It's not just a nice to have, it's more like a table stakes requirement for cloud solutions.
Exactly. It's more than a big deal. It's a critical prerequisite for deploying cloud-based solutions within these federal civilian executive branch agencies we're talking about. FedRAMP provides that standardized, rigorous approach to security assessment and authorization for cloud services. Achieving this ATO validates that the Insight platform's architecture, its security controls, its operational processes, they all meet the high standards required to protect government data. The core insight here is that this authorization unlocks the ability for agencies within DHS, DOJ, and others to actually procure and deploy Rapid7's cloud-native software as a service or SaaS-based solutions. This gives them the full power of a platform that's continuously updated with the latest threat intelligence and capabilities. Plus, it includes a U.S.-based FIPS-compliant deployment for data sovereignty, ensuring that sensitive government data stays within secure, authorized perimeters.
That strong foundation, that FedRAMP piece, is absolutely key. And looking at its core architecture, it really seems designed to tackle that siloed tools problem we just discussed, where different teams use different solutions and, well, nobody sees the full picture. It truly is. The core architectural advantage of the Rapid7 Insight platform lies in its ability to ingest, correlate, and analyze security telemetry from across the entire hybrid enterprise. Think of it less like a collection of individual tools and more like a central nervous system for security.
That's a good analogy.
Through a combination of lightweight agents deployed on endpoints, on-premise collectors for maybe older legacy systems, network sensors, and direct cloud integrations, the platform collects and unifies data from pretty much everything. Endpoints, servers, network devices, cloud services, applications. This vast amount of data is then centralized in the Insight Cloud, and that's where it powers multiple security disciplines, VM, SIEM, SOAR, all from a single shared data lake. The profound impact of this unified approach is that it fundamentally breaks down those operational silos that have plagued government security teams for, well, decades.
Right. VM team has their tool, SOC has theirs, IT ops has theirs.
That's exactly. Traditionally, the vulnerability management team, the SOC, the IT operations team, they've each used their own disparate tools with their own data sets. And that leads to a fragmented view of risk and significant friction during incident response and remediation. The Insight platform provides a shared, integrated view. It's accessible to all stakeholders. So when the SOC investigates an alert, for instance, they can immediately see the full vulnerability and asset context right there from the same platform. And when IT operations gets a remediation ticket, it's already enriched with the same risk prioritization and threat intelligence that the security team uses. This shared context is really the key to accelerating that entire security lifecycle, from detection to response and crucially to actual remediation, getting things fixed faster.
And that architectural advantage, that unified data lake, directly enables a suite of incredibly powerful core capabilities. Let's start with InsightVM, which is Rapid7's vulnerability risk management solution. This goes far beyond just traditional periodic scanning. It delivers dynamic asset discovery across both on-premise and cloud environments, ensuring agencies have that complete and continuously updated inventory, which, as we mentioned, is a foundational requirement of the CDM program.
Okay.
Its key differentiator, though, is an AI-driven prioritization engine. It calculates an active risk score for each vulnerability. This score integrates real-world threat context from Rapid7's global research teams, deep exploit knowledge from their Metasploit framework, data on actual attacker behavior to surface the risks most likely to be exploited and with the greatest potential impact. The core insight here, this allows those resource-constrained federal teams to focus their extremely limited time and effort on the vulnerabilities that truly matter, the ones actively being exploited, rather than chasing down an endless list of low-impact findings.
Cutting through the noise again.
Precisely. And for compliance, InsightVM provides customizable dashboards, comprehensive reporting tailored specifically for FISMA and FedRAMP continuous monitoring requirements. Then there's InsightIDR. That's their Cloud SIEM and Extended Detection and Response, or XDR solution. This is cloud-native, built from the ground up specifically to detect and respond to the most modern threats. As we discussed, a SIEM collects and analyzes logs. XDR takes that a significant step further. It combines that log data with endpoint data via the Insight Agent and network traffic, unifying them all into a single correlated view. InsightIDR really excels at detecting those stealthy techniques used by APTs targeting federal agencies.
Nice sneaky stuff.
Exactly. Its integrated user and entity behavior analytics, or UEB, engine baselines normal activity to detect anomalies. Things that could indicate compromised credentials, maybe an insider threat, or that lateral movement we talked about, those elusive attack vectors that often bypass traditional signature-based tools. By embedding up-to-the-minute threat intelligence directly into its detection analytics, InsightIDR provides security analysts with high-context, actionable alerts. This significantly reduces alert fatigue and accelerates investigation times.
Okay, so better alerts, less noise, faster investigation.
Right. And to truly tie this all together into an automated security lifecycle, you have Insight Connect. This is the security orchestration, automation, and response, the SOR engine of the Insight platform. It features a very user-friendly no-code workflow builder. This allows security teams to automate repetitive tasks without needing specialized programming skills.
No coding needed. That's huge.
It's a big deal for teams struggling with staffing. With an extensive library of plugins for hundreds of third-party security and IT tools, Insight Connect can seamlessly integrate an agency's entire technology stack. This enables automated workflows, often called playbooks, for basically everything. From enriching alerts with additional context, investigating phishing attempts, all the way to orchestrating a full vulnerability remediation lifecycle. That includes automatic ticket creation, maybe patch deployment through existing tools, and then verification scanning to make sure the fix worked. For federal agencies facing that critical talent shortage, Insight Connect acts as a significant force multiplier. It frees up analysts for higher value tasks and ensures rapid, consistent responses to threats.
So it's not just about finding the problems anymore, but actively helping fix them, automating that process, and even helping prevent them in the first place. I also see Insight AppSec in the portfolio. What role does that play? Yes, Insight AppSec provides dynamic application security testing, or DAST. This solution scans web applications and APIs for vulnerabilities, think things like the infamous OWASP POP 10 list, before attackers can find and exploit them. The key here is that the findings from Insight AppSec are then fed directly into the Unified Platform's risk model. This gives agencies a complete and comprehensive view of their application risk, which honestly is often a major blind spot in traditional security programs focusing only on infrastructure.
And beyond the technology itself, Rapid7 also offers MDR services, or Managed Detection and Response. This provides 24/7 expert monitoring, proactive threat hunting, deep incident analysis, and critical response guidance. It's really designed to augment existing agency SOCs, fill those crucial staffing gaps we keep mentioning, and ensure continuous vigilance for agencies that might be stretched thin and simply lack the round-the-clock resources internally.
Okay, so extra expert eyes. And for looking outside the agency's perimeter to see what threats might be coming down the pike or what sensitive information might already be out there, we have Threat Command. Right, Threat Command is all about external threat intelligence and digital risk protection. It continuously monitors the open web, the deep web, even the dark web for any mentions of agency assets. Things like domain names, maybe leaked credentials popping up for sale, sensitive data disclosures. It provides curated threat intelligence feeds and alerts for common external risks, phishing campaigns targeting the agency, data leaks, brand impersonation attempts. Crucially, it even offers rapid takedown capabilities for malicious sites that are actively targeting an agency or its employees. It's really about proactive defense before a threat even reaches your network edge.
Yeah. And finally, something truly unique, especially in the federal space, Metasploit Pro. Rapid7 actually owns the world's most widely used penetration testing framework, Metasploit.
Right, Metasploit is huge.
It is, and this allows for seamless validation of vulnerabilities found by InsightVM. You can test your defenses with safe, controlled exploit simulations using the same techniques attackers use. This provides what they call closed-loop exploitability validation. It helps agencies move beyond just theoretical risk scores to confirm which flaws are truly exploitable by real attackers in their specific environment. This allows agencies to prioritize those genuinely critical issues that need immediate attention and also verify that their mitigations, their fixes, actually work against determined adversaries. It closes the loop.
Well, okay. These are some seriously powerful tools and services, especially when you think about that unified approach, bringing it all together. But how do they directly translate into helping federal agencies meet all those demanding mandates we discussed earlier? Let's start with zero trust architecture that seems to be the guiding star for so much of federal cybersecurity right now.
Yeah, achieving zero trust architecture, or ZTA, is absolutely a foundational strategic priority for the entire federal government. It represents that fundamental paradigm shift away from perimeter-based security towards never trust, always verify. The Rapid7 Insight platform provides the core technological pillars you need to build and, importantly, operate a ZTA environment with continuous verification. First, through continuous monitoring and validation. ZTA fundamentally requires comprehensive, real-time visibility into every asset, every user, all the time. InsightVM continuously assesses asset integrity, vulnerabilities, misconfigurations, anything that could violate ZTA policies. Simultaneously, InsightIDR monitors all activity. It analyzes user behavior, endpoint processes, network traffic, looking for anomalies in real time. This constant stream of rich contextual data provides the dynamic risk signals necessary for those real-time access decisions, which is the very essence of zero trust.
Okay, so it's constantly feeding the decision engine.
Yes,
exactly. Second, for least privilege access enforcement. InsightIDR's user and entity behavior analytics, the UEBA component, can detect when an account starts doing things outside its normal baseline, maybe accessing unusual resources, performing strange actions. It immediately flags potential compromise or maybe an insider threat. Through Insight Connect, that detection can trigger automated responses, things like forcing multi-factor reauthentication or integrating with identity and access management, IAM systems to temporarily suspend the account. It enforces least privilege access policies in real time at machine speed.
Automated enforcement, okay. Yeah.
Third, for micro-segmentation support. Designing and maintaining effective micro-segmentation policies which restrict network traffic even between internal segments requires a really deep understanding of network traffic flows and asset dependencies. InsightVM and the Insight Agent provide this detailed visibility, helping architects accurately design effective policies in the first place. Then, once implemented, InsightIDR can continuously monitor traffic between these microsegments to detect and alert on any policy violations, ensuring the integrity of the ZTA model over time. The core insight here is that Rapid7 provides the continuous, granular visibility needed to not just implement zero trust, but to continuously verify its effectiveness day in and day out.
Okay, so it's directly supporting those core principles of zero trust, which makes a lot of sense. What about the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, CDM? That's such a massive government-wide effort. How does Rapid7 fit in there?
Yeah, Rapid7 significantly powers the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program. As you said, it's a CISA-led, government-wide effort to help agencies continuously monitor their networks, identify and prioritize risks, and mitigate vulnerabilities at, ideally, near-network speed. It's a flagship program, absolutely. Notably, Rapid7's on-premise vulnerability management solutions are already included on the CDM-approved products list, the APL. That gives agencies a direct procurement path, which is important.
Right. Removes a hurdle, but the Insight platform goes much further than just being on a list. It enhances core CDM requirements across the board. For asset management, which basically asks what is on the network, InsightVM provides comprehensive hardware and software asset management, configuration settings management, vulnerability management, all continuously updated, not just point-in-time scans. For identity and access management, asking who is on the network. InsightIDR offers deep visibility into user accounts, managed privileges, authentication events, and its UEBA engine helps determine trustworthiness based on behavior. And for network security management, or what is happening on the network, InsightIDR's network traffic analysis and intrusion detection capabilities provide that crucial visibility into network flows and potential threats. Furthermore, the Insight platform can significantly enhance the CDM agency-wide adaptive risk enumeration, or AWARE, capability. While Aware provides a valuable baseline score for risk, InsightVM's active risk scoring engine offers a far more advanced and context-rich model.
By incorporating that real-time threat intelligence and exploitability data we talked about, it moves beyond just simple severity to the actual likelihood of exploitation. This leads to demonstrably superior risk reduction because you're focusing resources more effectively. It helps agencies truly prioritize the most dangerous risks on their network.
And then we have operationalizing those CISA directives for rapid risk reduction. This is perhaps where Rapid7 delivers the most immediate and, frankly, tangible value, especially for mandates related to the known exploited vulnerabilities, the KEV catalog, which often come with those extremely short, non-negotiable deadlines. The Insight platform provides a closed-loop, end-to-end workflow to automate compliance, turning those directives from paper into action.
How does that loop work?
Okay, first, detect. As soon as CISA adds a new CVE to the KEV catalog, InsightVM's Emergent Threat Response Program gets immediately updated. Its continuous scanning and agent-based visibility automatically identify every single affected asset across the entire hybrid environment, cloud, on-prem, everything. So you get complete, immediate visibility into your exposure. Second, prioritize. InsightVM's granular risk scoring, which considers both asset criticality, how important is this system, and real-time threat context, is this KEV being actively used against agencies like mine, allows for immediate prioritization of critical systems. Teams can instantly see which KEVs are on their most vital assets. Third, respond. This is where Insight Connect becomes a true game changer for meeting deadlines. A pre-build or even custom workflow can be triggered by InsightVM's detection. It can automatically integrate with the agency's ITSM system, ServiceNow, Jira, whatever they use to create and assign patching tickets.
Automating the ticketing, nice.
Exactly. For more advanced cases, it can integrate directly with patch management tools like Microsoft SCCM to actually deploy the patches. Or it can integrate with Network Access Control, NAC, solutions to automatically quarantine compromise or non-compliant devices until they're fixed. This level of automated response can dramatically reduce the mean time to remediate the MTTR from potentially weeks or months down to just hours or days. That's how you directly meet CISA's aggressive deadlines.
Huge difference.
Massive. Fourth, report. InsightVM's customizable dashboards and reporting provide security leadership and compliance teams with a near real-time view of progress. This enables on-demand reports to CISA, the agency's inspector general, whoever needs it. It proves that not only are vulnerabilities being identified, but that the agency is actively reducing its attack surface in measurable, demonstrable ways.
So it's about seeing the threat instantly, prioritizing the real danger, acting on it incredibly quickly through automation, and then proving, with data, that the action was taken and the risk was reduced. That's a truly comprehensive cycle that federal agencies desperately need right now. And it sounds like Rapid7 maps very neatly to those NIST CSF 2.0 functions as well, giving agencies that common language to talk about their security posture.
That's absolutely right. When we look at the six NIST CSF 2.0 functions, Rapid7's capabilities map comprehensively across all of them. For Govern GV, the new function, the platform provides customizable risk scoring, executive dashboards perfect for leadership briefings, policy compliance scanning against standard benchmarks like CIS benchmarks, and it automates much of the compliance evidence collection, making audits easier. For Identify ID, it excels at continuous asset discovery, hardware, software, cloud instances, network gear vulnerability cataloging, network mapping, and identifying users and accounts across the environment. Foundational visibility.
Moving to Protect, PR, Rapid7 offers that prioritized remediation guidance we discussed, integrates with patch management systems, provides endpoint detection and prevention capabilities, monitors policy violations, and can even deploy deception technology, like honeypots, to trick attackers. In terms of Detect, DE, it delivers real-time detection of active threats malware, compromised credentials, lateral movement attempts. It uses UEBA for insider threats and correlates alerts with rich threat intelligence for immediate context, reducing false positives. For Respond RS, it provides rich incident response data, enables immediate endpoint containment actions, orchestrates those automated playbooks via Insight Connect, and coordinates actions across various security and IT tools. And finally, for Recover RC, it offers pre-incident vulnerability data that helps harden systems to prevent future incidents, verify system cleanliness after recovery, and can automate post-incident actions to prevent recurrence. It really is designed as a continuous loop of security, supported by an integrated platform that addresses every single stage of the cybersecurity lifecycle.
Okay, let's pivot now. This is important. We need to look at the key competitive landscape. Many federal agencies, as you know, have relied on incumbent vendors for their vulnerability management for years. And Qualys is a significant one with a considerable federal foothold. So let's examine Qualys's strength, but also, crucially, from Rapid7's perspective, its strategic vulnerabilities in today's federal market.
Right. Qualys is definitely a name you hear a lot in federal VM. What are those strengths? Why have they been so entrenched in the federal space for so long?
Qualys definitely has some clear strengths that have contributed to its market share, no doubt. They possess that essential FedRAMP moderate authorization. Their platform reportedly has been deployed to around 70 federal agencies, often through the CDM program contracts. They've also built a strong reputation over the years as a dedicated vulnerability scanner, known particularly for their breadth of detection, boasting, I think, over 150,000 vulnerability signatures. So yeah, they certainly have a significant presence and a long history in the space.
Okay. Established presence, broad scanning. But what about the vulnerabilities? Where can Rapid7 make its case?
Right, the vulnerabilities. This is where it gets interesting for Rapid7. Historically, Qualys emphasized sheer breadth of detection, finding everything possible, often over deep contextual prioritization. This approach can, frankly, overwhelm agency security teams with thousands upon thousands of findings, many of varying relevance or actual exploitability. This becomes a critical point, especially given CISA's BioD 22-01, which specifically emphasizes focusing remediation efforts on known exploited vulnerabilities, the KEVs.
So too much noise.
Potentially, yes. Furthermore, Qualys critically lacks native CIEM, XDR, or SOAR capabilities. This is a major gap. It means agencies using Qualys are forced to procure, deploy, and then manually correlate or integrate with additional third-party tools to achieve comprehensive security operations. That adds significant cost and complexity. Their user interface, while functional, is often described by users as over-modularized and sometimes clunky compared to Rapid7's more unified and modern experience. Crucially, Qualys cannot natively perform penetration testing or exploit validation, that Metasploit capability we discussed. It lacks that ability to confirm true exploitability. Their primary focus also remains heavily on traditional IT asset security, with less known capability or market presence in emerging but critical areas like ODIX environments. And finally, as a SaaS-first platform, it generally requires consistent cloud connectivity, which might not always be suitable for certain air-gapped or highly classified networks within some federal agencies. The core insight here: Qualys is a strong scanner, historically very competent at finding vulnerabilities. But it's arguably not a comprehensive platform designed for modern threats, integrated workflows, and outcome-based mandates.
That really paints a picture, doesn't it? A tool that might have served very well in a different era, when just scanning and reporting was the primary focus, but maybe struggles to meet today's much more integrated and automated demands. So let's flip it. What are Rapid7's decisive advantages over Qualys? Where does Rapid7 truly shine in this comparison? Okay, this is where Rapid7 truly differentiates itself, especially for the modern federal needs we've been discussing. Let's break down these decisive advantages over Qualys, focusing specifically on where Rapid7 provides superior value. First, risk-based vulnerability management and prioritization. This is huge. While Qualys might give you a massive list of vulnerabilities, Rapid7 Insight VM's active risk score is the real game changer here. It integrates that real-world threat intelligence, the exploit exposure data from Metasploit, actual attacker behavior, all to prioritize known exploited vulnerabilities and cut through the noise. This directly aligns with CISA's BioD 22-01, which mandates focusing on KEVs.
It's a significant contrast to Qualys' traditional focus on CVSS scores, which, as we know, can generate a lot of noise about theoretical risks that aren't actually being exploited. The insight. Rapid7 helps agencies focus their limited resources on what will likely be exploited, not just what could theoretically be exploited.
Huge efficiency gain.
Absolutely. Second, continuous monitoring and faster remediation cycles. Rapid7 moves beyond just periodic scanning. The Insight Agent provides real-time, continuous visibility. This is complemented by network scanning for unmanaged assets, directly whistling BOD 23001 requirements for frequent enumeration. Plus, Rapid7 has built-in remediation project tracking and deep ITSM integrations to actually accelerate patching workflows. It's about continuous mitigation, getting things fixed faster, not just continuous scanning to find more problems. Third, a massive differentiator.
Native automation and orchestration with Insight Connect. This is a standout capability. It automates those repetitive, time-consuming tasks, ticketing, quarantining devices, even deploying patches, all with a user-friendly, no-code workflow builder and hundreds of pre-built integrations. Qualys simply lacks a comparable built-in orchestration engine. This forces agencies into custom scripting, manual processes, approaches that just don't scale effectively in large federal environments.
Right, manual effort doesn't scale.
Fourth, integrated threat detection and incident response with Insight IDR. This makes Rapid7 a full-stack security solution. It combines vulnerability management with a cloud-native CymxDR, UEBA, and EDR capabilities for active threat detection and response. This directly addresses EL 14028 logging and EDR mandates and those OMB event logging maturity requirements. Qualys has no comparable native CM or EDR offering. This means Rapid7 can provide a true single pane of glass for both proactive security finding vulnerabilities and reactive security detecting and responding to active threats. Qualys really only addresses the proactive piece. Fifth, penetration testing and validation with Metasploit integration. This is a unique advantage stemming from Rapid7 owning Metasploit. It allows agencies to seamlessly validate vulnerabilities with safe, controlled exploit simulations. This provides crucial proof of exploitability, allowing prioritization based on actual demonstrated risk, not just theoretical scores. It also gives concrete evidence to leadership about why a fix is needed now. Qualys has no native pen testing capabilities like this. Sixth, ease of use and a unified user experience. Independent comparisons, G2 reviews, user feedback, they consistently praise Rapid7's cleaner, more intuitive web interface. It generally gets higher marks for administration, dashboards, workflow management. This flatter learning curve means quicker adoption for agency staff, less training overhead, and less tool sprawl frustration, which helps maximize limited budgets and personnel time.
That user experience matters.
It really does. Seventh, comprehensive coverage for cloud, on-prem, and OT. Rapid7's portfolio includes Insight CloudSec for Cloud Security Posture Management, CSPM, and Cloud Infrastructure Entitlement Management, CIM, across multi-cloud environments like AWS and Azure. It has Insight AppSec for DAST. It offers flexible hybrid deployability, the FedRAMP Cloud option, on-premise Nexpose for disconnected networks, or even fully air-gapped options. And crucially, it's an OT-aware platform, which is increasingly important for agencies like the Department of Energy or DHS sectors managing critical infrastructure. Qualys largely remains focused on traditional IT assets. And finally, number eight, community and research support. Rapid7 benefits from the strong, active open source Metasploit community, the Attacker KB knowledge base sharing exploit context, and its dedicated Rapid7 Labs threat research team. This signals continuous innovation, provides valuable open source resources that federal teams can leverage, fosters collaboration across agencies, and helps keep users ahead of emerging threats. The core insight across all these points. Rapid7 offers a truly integrated platform for comprehensive risk management, detection, and response, not just a standalone scanning tool.
Jordan, that's an incredibly comprehensive breakdown of Rapid7's advantages over Qualys. Now, for the Rapid7 sales team listening, these aren't just abstract features. They are the foundation for very specific strategic takeout plays against Qualys, specifically designed to displace the incumbent in federal accounts.
Okay, let's hear them. What are the plays?
All right, play #1. Emphasize risk-based mandates and Qualys's overload problem. Frame Qualys as creating overwhelming noise, thousands of undifferentiated findings, while Rapid7 delivers actionable signal by focusing teams on KEVs and actively exploited vulnerabilities. The pitch sounds something like this. Qualys likely served you well in the old era of compliance checklists, but today's CESA directives, EO 14028, the focus on zero trust, they all demand a risk-focused approach that Rapid7 was purpose-built to deliver. Are you currently focusing your limited remediation resources on every ant, or are you targeting the actual grizzly bears threatening your mission? This forces decision-makers to question if their current tool is truly fit for the modern mission and mandate environment.
Makes sense. Make them question the status quo.
It's exactly. Play. #2. Position Rapid7 as a unified platform to reduce tool sprawl and costs. This is key. Highlight that Rapid7 can potentially replace multiple point products, their existing vulnerability management tool, maybe a separate SIEM, maybe they're struggling with SR or lack it entirely. Rapid7 offers a consolidated platform. This means fewer licenses to manage, less integration overhead, potentially significant cost savings, and reduced complexity for their teams. The question to the agency becomes, Why keep a single-purpose tool like Qualys that primarily tells you what's wrong when you can have a multi-purpose platform like Rapid7 that helps you fix it faster, detect active threats in real time, and automates compliance, potentially all for the same or even less investment?
The consolidation and efficiency argument.
Precisely. Play #3. Leverage FedRAMP approval and FedCall success stories to overcome inertia. Rapid7's FedRAMP moderate status puts it on equal footing with Qualys from a procurement standpoint, removing a key historical barrier. Then you cite specific, referenceable public sector customers, NASA, the Department of State, HHS components, and remind them of Rapid7's inclusion on the CDM APO. These serve as robust proof points, making Qualys seem replaceable and Rapid7 seem proven and trusted in critical government environments. It combats the nobody gets fired for buying IBM mentality.
Build credibility, reduce perceived risk.
Exactly. Play #4. The better together, play focus on integration and ease of use. Demonstrate Insight Connect's intuitive drag-and-drop, no-code automation versus Qualys' reliance on custom API scripting, which requires specialized, often scarce, talent within the agency. Highlight Rapid7's modern intuitive UI, the potentially quicker scan configurations, and the extensive library of pre-built integrations with crucial federal tools like ServiceNow, Splunk, AWS, Azure, etc. The message here is personal for the teams. Your analysts will be up to speed faster, they'll reduce tedious manual effort, and they might actually enjoy using a tool that simplifies their daily workflows and makes them more effective.
Focus on the user experience and analyst pain points.
Right. Play #5. Exploit Qualys' gaps in validation and response. Frame Qualys accurately. It tells you what's wrong. Vulnerabilities exist, but it doesn't tell you if those vulnerabilities are truly exploitable in your environment, nor does it tell you if an incident is actively happening right now because of that vulnerability. Rapid7's Metasploit integration provides that crucial validation piece. And Insight IDR MDR offers the comprehensive detection and response capabilities that Qualys simply doesn't have natively. This frames Qualys as leaving unacceptable blind spots and critical response gaps, especially given today's aggressive threat landscape.
Point out the risks they're still carrying.
Yes. Play #6. Consider a tool consolidation takeout bundle offer. Propose a financially favorable deal specifically designed for swapping out Qualys. Bundle Insight VM plus Insight IDR at very competitive pricing. Incentivize the transition further by offering robust data migration assistance and comprehensive training packages. Make the switch as smooth and financially attractive as possible.
Make it easy to switch.
Make it a no-brainer, if possible. And finally, play #7. Highlight continuous innovation and support culture. Contrast Rapid7's demonstrable track record of continuous updates, its strong threat research engine, Metasploit, Attacker KB, Rapid7 Labs, and its open collaboration culture with Qualys' perceived slower innovation cycle and occasional confusing rebrands or product shifts. Position Rapid7 as the innovative, responsive ally that keeps pace with a rapidly evolving threat landscape rather than a more static legacy scanner.
Okay, Qualys covered. So we put Rapid7 side by side with Qualys. Now let's turn our attention to the other major incumbent you often see in the federal space, Tenable. What's the picture there? What are Tenable's strengths and, again, its strategic vulnerabilities?
Right, Tenable. Like Qualys, Tenable has a deep and very long-standing federal foothold, particularly strong within the Department of Defense. It's the technology provider behind the DoD's ACS program that's the Assured Compliance Assessment Solution, which is the DoD's enterprise solution for vulnerability scanning. This has effectively established Tenable.sc, their on-premise manager, as a standard in many defense circles. This incumbency gives them a strong brand reputation, especially for comprehensive vulnerability coverage and accuracy, largely built on the back of their flagship Nessus scanner technology, which is highly respected. They also have FedRAMP authorized cloud offerings, so they meet that essential cloud prerequisite for broader federal civilian agency adoption as well.
Okay, so strong DoD presence, Nessus reputation, FedRAMP. Sounds formidable. What are the vulnerabilities then? Where's the opening for Rapid7 against Tenable?
Yeah, despite those strengths, Tenable also has significant strategic vulnerabilities that Rapid7 can and absolutely should exploit. First, while they market the Tenable One Exposure Management Platform, users often find it feels more like a portfolio of distinct products rather than a truly integrated platform. These products often lack deep native integration. You can run into inconsistent user interfaces, limited cross-product workflows. It often forces agencies to bear the significant cost and complexity of integrating these different Tenable pieces themselves manually.
So less integrated than the branding suggests.
That's often the feedback, yes. Second, and this is critical, Tenable has a complete absence of a native SIEM or XDR solution. To meet EO 14028's EDR requirements or OMB M2131's logging mandates, a Tenable customer must procure, deploy, and integrate separate third-party SIEM and EDR tools. This dramatically increases complexity, adds cost, requires managing multiple vendors, and inevitably slows down incident response because data isn't inherently correlated. Third, much of Tenable's historical federal success, particularly in DoD, is tied to its on-premise Tenable.sc product. While robust, this increasingly contrasts with the federal civilian executive branch's strong cloud-first mandate and the growing need for continuous visibility into dynamic cloud environments. Their architectural roots are more on-prem focused.
Okay, a potential mismatch with cloud initiatives.
And finally, similar to some feedback on Qualys, user reviews frequently describe Tenable's UI across its various products as potentially buggy, clunky, or having inferior reporting capabilities compared to more modern platforms. Lackluster or unresponsive customer support is also sometimes cited as a major pain point for agencies using Tenable. The core insight here, Tenable offers a collection of strong point solutions, particularly Nessus for spanning, but arguably struggles to deliver a truly integrated, user-friendly platform experience needed for modern unified security operations.
So again, similar theme. Very good at one thing, scanning, but maybe less so as a holistic platform in today's integrated and cloud-centric federal environment. Where does Rapid7 really gain its decisive advantages over Tenable specifically? You're absolutely right to pick up on that portfolio versus platform distinction. It's critical here, and is where Rapid7 holds several decisive advantages over Tenable. First, again, integrated vulnerability management and risk prioritization. While both obviously offer scanning via strong engines, Rapid7's active risk score, that 1-1000 scale, integrates the real-world threat intel, exploit likelihood, and attacker behavior analysis. And uniquely, it offers that closed-loop exploitability validation using Metasploit to confirm actual exploitability in the agency's environment. This provides more operational context than Tenable's VPR, vulnerability priority rating, alone. Rapid7 helps agencies work smarter by showing them what truly matters and is actively dangerous right now. Second, beyond scanning, XDR detection and response, this is a major, undeniable gap for Tenable. Rapid7 offers the full suite of integrated security operations tools, SIEM, EDR, User Behavior Analytics, UBA, all natively combined with an Insight IDR. This directly addresses those critical EO 14028 EDR and logging mandates. It allows agencies to consolidate their security stack, replacing Tenable and potentially filling significant threat detection and response gaps they might have with other tools or no tools at all. It provides truly proactive and reactive security from a single unified platform, whereas Tenable requires bolting on multiple, separately managed third-party products.
That consolidation point is powerful.
It is. Third, cloud security and DevSecOps. Rapid7's Insight CloudSec, their cloud-native application protection platform, or CNAPP, provides comprehensive cloud workload and posture management. Insight OPSEC handles the DAS piece for applications and APIs, and these are fully integrated components of the core Insight platform. This provides that coveted single pane of glass for both on-premise and cloud environments, offering a unified risk score across the entire hybrid estate. This is particularly attractive for those cloud-forward government teams seeking consistent security standards, visibility, and compliance across all their environments. Fourth, automation and orchestration with Insight Connect. Again, Rapid7 embeds powerful SOAR capabilities natively. This streamlines critical workflows, automated ticketing, triggering remediation scripts, integrating with patch management tools. With hundreds of integrations, it seamlessly bridges the gap between security and IT operations teams. Tenable, in stark contrast, largely relies on external tools or custom scripting for any significant automation, creating more manual effort, potential for error, and integration challenges for the agency.
Fifth, user experience and reporting. Rapid7 generally boasts a more modern, cohesive, cloud-based UI with live, customizable dashboards. These provide real-time risk visualization and make it easy to generate on-demand compliance evidence for FedRAMP, FISMA, CISA directives. This creates a more holistic, intuitive risk picture derived from integrated data, often contrasting sharply with Tenable's potentially less intuitive, sometimes piecemeal, and frequently described clunky reports across its different modules. This translates to higher analyst efficiency and, frankly, better job satisfaction.
Don't underestimate analyst happiness.
Absolutely not, especially with the staffing shortages. And finally, sixth, a comprehensive portfolio. Rapid7's offerings span the gamut: VM, XDR, cloud security, application security, automation, SOAR, managed services, MDR, threat intelligence, and the unique Metasploit validation piece. This addresses a much broader set of mission requirements than Tenable's largely VM-focused suite. It gives agencies a more complete, unified, and arguably future-proof security solution from a single strategic vendor.
Okay, those are some very significant advantages. And just like with Qualys, these advantages become the building blocks for compelling Tenable takeout plays for the Rapid7 sales team, specifically designed to highlight Tenable's deficiencies in the modern context and drive adoption of the Insight platform.
Let's hear the Tenable plays.
All right, play #1. Highlight Tenable's limited scope versus Rapid7's comprehensive platform. Position Tenable accurately. It's primarily VM-focused. This forces agencies using it to buy, integrate, and manage multiple other tools for essential capabilities like integrated detection, Summiter, automation, AIR-HRS, and comprehensive cloud security. Rapid7, conversely, covers VM plus XDR plus cloud plus automation, all within one natively integrated platform. This saves money, reduces complexity, and dramatically improves security outcomes by breaking down those dangerous operational silos. The question for the agency, are you paying for just a scanner, or are you investing in a platform that addresses the full security lifecycle?
Frame it as platform versus point solution.
That's exactly. Play #2. Emphasize continuous and proactive versus periodic scanning. Tenable, especially with its on-prem roots, often relies heavily on scheduled scans, which are inherently just snapshots in time. Risk changes by the minute. Rapid7's agent-based model provides continuous visibility for true real-time risk management, directly aligning with CDM and BOD 2301's demands for continuous asset discovery and vulnerability enumeration. Ask the agency, do you know your current risk score right now across your entire environment or only what it was the last time your Nessus scan completed, maybe last week? Rapid7 provides live, continuous insights.
Highlighting the real-time aspect.
Critical. Play #3. Focus on risk prioritization and actionability. Tenable, like Qualys sometimes, can overwhelm agencies with raw vulnerability findings, making it difficult to know what to fix first among thousands of alerts. Rapid7 translates these findings into actionable risk metrics using its active risk score and provides guided remediation steps. Cite specifically how Rapid7 surfaces the most actionable risks through its integration of threat context, exploitability data, and attacker behavior analysis. The message. Rapid7 helps your limited staff work smarter, not just harder, by focusing on the threats that pose the greatest actual danger to your mission.
Smarter, not harder. Got it.
Play #4. Underscore automation of remediation versus manual effort. Directly address the common pain point many Tenable customers face, the manual effort involved in creating tickets, tracking remediation, and chasing IT teams to get Tenable findings fixed. Rapid7 automates much of this drudgery with its native SRR capabilities, Insight Connect, integrating directly with ITSM platforms and patch management tools. The takeaway message. Tenable primarily tells you what to fix. Rapid7 actually helps you fix it faster and more efficiently through automation, translating directly to time savings, cost savings, and faster risk reduction.
Show the path to faster fixing.
Precisely. Play #5. Pitch innovation and future readiness. Position Rapid7 as the forward-leaning innovator, highlighting its investments in attacker behavior analytics, integrated exploit testing via Metasploit, AI-driven capabilities across the platform. Contrast this with Tenable's perceived slower innovation cycle beyond its core scanning technology. Nessus, while powerful, has foundations dating back to the 1990s. Position Rapid7 as continuously advancing through open collaboration, Metasploit community, and cutting-edge research, ensuring agencies are equipped for tomorrow's threats, not just defending against yesterday's.
Position Rapid7 is the future-proof choice.
Yes. Play #6. Leverage proof points and references. Use existing public sector success stories aggressively. Cite examples like the University of South Florida or a reference trust from other cabinet departments where Rapid7 is deployed, like state and HHS. This builds crucial confidence and provides third-party validation that Rapid7 is proven and effective in demanding government environments. And finally, play #7. Exploit contract and procurement angles. Actively tracked Tenable contract renewal dates within target agencies. Position Rapid7 as a highly competitive alternative available on all the key government-wide acquisition contracts, GWOCs, CDMC-MAS, GSA-AS, NASA-CPV, ITES-SW2, etc. Emphasize that Rapid7 is just as easy, if not easier, to buy, and crucially, provides strong justification for displacing the incumbent, perhaps by highlighting Rapid7's superior ability to cover critical cloud assets or meet specific new mandates, like EDR, that might not have been fully addressed in the original Tenable contract scope. #6, high-priority agencies, components, programs, use cases, and personas for Rapid7.
Okay, so with all these clear advantages over both Qualys and Tenable and these really specific strategic takeout plays, where should Rapid7 be focusing its efforts within the vast federal civilian landscape? What are the absolute highest priority agencies and departments, and which programs, and maybe more importantly, which people within those organizations should they be engaging with first? Right, this is where we get really tactical and specific. For Department of Homeland Security, DHS, especially CISA itself and the various DHS components, this has to be a top priority. Why? Well, CISA is both a major user and a critical provider of cybersecurity services and guidance to the entire federal enterprise. CISA runs the massive CDM program, sets the binding directives, BODs, and wields immense influence across FCEB agencies. DHS components also frequently serve as pilots for new technologies. And with a FY 2025 cybersecurity budget request exceeding $1.2 billion, there's significant opportunity there. The core focus for DHS should be on enhancing CISA's core mission. Quote, reduce agency threat surface and improve response through advanced CDM capabilities, supporting their continuous threat exposure management, CTEM efforts, and helping operationalize their own directives faster.
Makes sense. CISA is key.
Absolutely. Then we have the Department of Justice, DOJ, including the SBI and its other bureaus and components. DOJ handles incredibly sensitive national security matters, critical law enforcement functions, and vast amounts of citizen data. This makes it a high-value target for sophisticated attackers, and it's a department that has unfortunately been impacted by recent high-profile incidents. With a significant $1.1 billion cybersecurity allocation, DOJ needs agility, deep integration across its components, and robust security. The focus here should be on supporting their zero-trust implementation efforts, empowering the FBI's Security Operations Centers, SOCs, with advanced detection and response, and ensuring stringent CJIS compliance for sensitive criminal justice information. And importantly for DOJ, Rapid7's on-premise Nexpo solution is critical for those often air-gapped or highly isolated environments you find in law enforcement and national security contexts.
Good point on the air-gapped needs.
Let's also highlight the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. This is another massive department holding incredibly sensitive healthcare data, vital research, intellectual property, and it's a frequent target for cyber attacks, particularly ransomware. HHS is under constant pressure from Congress and the public to improve its security posture significantly. Rapid7 can focus on protecting high-value scientific data and research at components like the National Institutes of Health, NIH, improving intrusion detection across its sprawling network, specifically addressing the security of operational technology, OT, and Internet of Things, IoT, medical devices, a huge and growing attack surface and unifying visibility across its diverse and often federated operational divisions. The core insight for HHS, demonstrating how Rapid7 can protect sensitive patient data and critical research without adding undue complexity to their already stretched IT and security teams. Beyond these top three, you have other critical agencies within that CFO Act Big 15 group of large civilian agencies. Department of Energy, DOE, overseeing national labs, the energy sector, critical grid control systems. This makes it a prime target for Rapid7's OT-aware monitoring capabilities and its flexible on-premise solutions, given DOE's heavily blended IT and industrial control systems, ICS environments. The Department of Veterans Affairs, VA, operating the largest healthcare network in the country. They desperately need help addressing persistent challenges with unpatched systems, securing an enormous fleet of diverse medical devices, and providing a unified security view across their vast network of hospitals and clinics.
Building on those specific target agencies, there are also specific key programs, initiatives, and common use cases across the federal government that Rapid7 should prioritize, as these often represent significant budget allocations and immediate mandate-driven pain points.
Okay, like what?
First, the Continuous Diagnostics and the Mitigation CDM program, specifically the defend phase of that program. As we've said, it's the flagship federal program for continuous risk management. Rapid7 is already on the CDM APO, which is great. The focus here needs to be on highlighting Rapid7's superior risk scoring and dashboarding capabilities compared to just baseline requirements, positioning it as the leading risk-based VM solution available within CDM, and showcasing its advanced CDM capabilities that go beyond basic asset inventory, things like container security, cloud security, posture management integration. Second, zero trust architecture initiatives. With OMB M2209 mandating significant ZTA progress by the end of FY 2024, this is a top tier priority for every agency.
Rapid7 provides that essential device risk signal through continuous monitoring via Insight VM. It supports the application security pillar with Insight AppSec and Metasploit validation. And it offers the extensive logging and visibility needed for other pillars through Insight IDR. The messaging here should emphasize how migrating to a comprehensive, integrated risk-based platform like Rapid7 is a direct and measurable ZTA maturity improvement for the agency.
Connected directly to ZTA goals.
Directly. Third, operationalizing CISA directives for Rapid risk reduction. We hit this hard already, but it bears repeating because it's such a critical pain point. Rapid7 offers immediate tangible value for meeting mandates like the KEV catalog remediation deadlines, demonstrating that closed loop automation from KV detection to automated remediation via Insight Connect is an incredibly powerful use case that resonates immediately with operational teams. Fourth, cloud migration and DevSecOps projects. As agencies aggressively pursue cloud smart strategies and modernize their applications, Rapid7 offers Insight CloudSec for CSPM and CIM across multi-cloud environments, plus Insight AppSec for DAST integrated into the CI/CD pipeline. This provides a unified platform with consistent risk scoring and policy enforcement from development through deployment. The target audience here should specifically include agency DevSecOps teams and their cloud centers of excellence, CCOEs.
Okay, that's a really strong alignment of the platform's capabilities to specific agency programs and initiatives. But ultimately, it's also about reaching the right people, isn't it? Who are the key stakeholders, the specific personas, the partners, the influencers that Rapid7 needs to be engaging with inside these high priority organizations?
Absolutely. It's about connecting with the individuals whose specific pain points Rapid7 can directly solve. Let's break down some key personas. For agency CISOs and CIOs, their primary pain points revolve around mission impact of cyber incidents, the burden of compliance reporting, managing fragmented tools, severe budget constraints, and those critical staffing shortages. Rapid7's value proposition for them needs to be framed clearly. Better risk posture, plus streamlined compliance, plus improved cost efficiency. It's about enabling tool consolidation, leveraging automation to let them do more with their existing staff, and providing quantifiable risk reduction metrics they can report up to agency leadership and OMB. Then you have security operations and incident response leads. Think SOC managers, incident response team leads, maybe CTOs overseeing operations.
Their daily pain points are things like overwhelming alert fatigue, a critical lack of context during investigations, slow incident response times because data is siloed across different tools. For them, Rapid7 offers better detection fidelity, fewer false positives, less noise, deeply integrated tools providing context on demand, advanced UEBA to spot insider threats or compromised accounts, and even attacker traps like honeypots. This translates directly to fewer trivial alerts, more actionable high-context insights, and faster, more effective response.
Improving the analysts' lives.
Exactly. Then let's get really specific with some law enforcement and operational personas, especially within DOJ and DHS. The FBI Executive Assistant Director, EAD, for the cyber division, cares deeply about strategic direction, operational tempo against adversaries, and accurate attribution. For this leader, Rapid7 is positioned as a strategic force multiplier, enabling faster detection and response across investigations, with embedded threat intelligence crucial for supporting attribution efforts. Now, consider an FBI special agent or a cyber action team member on the front lines during a breach. They're dealing with chaotic scenes, needing rapid understanding of the network, immediate containment capabilities, and preserving evidence meticulously. For them, Rapid7 offers immediate endpoint visibility, who did what when, lateral movement tracking, automated containment options, and immutable forensic data essential for building strong legal cases.
That forensic data point is key for DOJ.
Absolutely. Moving over to DHS, think about a CISA security architect or engineer. These are the folks designing the future of federal cybersecurity architectures, evaluating technologies for the approved products list, APL, thinking about scalable, integrated solutions. For them, Rapid7's open APIs, its extensive integration library, its ability to act as that central nervous system for a diverse security stack, its vendor-agnostic approach, and its direct alignment with CDM program goals will resonate deeply. They want flexible, integratable platforms.
Makes sense. They're the builders.
They are. Then you have folks like a U.S. Secret Service, USSS, Special Agent on a Cyber Fraud Task Force, CFTF. They need rapid network intrusion response capabilities, strong digital forensics, and proactive threat intelligence specifically focused on financial cybercrime. Rapid7 accelerates their investigations, provides legal defensible evidence, and offers insights into criminal TTPs via threat intelligence, or Consider the ICE CISO or their deputy CISOs. They're focused on rolling out zero trust across their enterprise, ensuring overall compliance, FISMA, etc., finding a unified platform to simplify operations, and leveraging FedRAMP authorized solutions. For them, Rapid7's unified platform checks multiple boxes simultaneously: VM, ZTA support, IDR, FedRAMP authorization, strong cloud capabilities. It simplifies their world.
And beyond engaging these individual personas directly, successfully penetrating the federal market requires deep engagement with federal systems integrators, FSIs, and key technology alliance partners. This is absolutely paramount.
Talk more about the FSIs. Who are they and why are they important?
Key FSIs include giants like Leidos, Booz, Allen Hamilton, SAIC, CACI International, basically the top 100 firms you see on the Washington technology list, the ones holding major integration and services contracts at BHS, DOJ, and other large agencies. Their role is critical. They are strategic partners to the agencies. They design, implement, and often operate major federal programs. And importantly, they often implemented the incumbent solutions like Tenable or Qualys in the first place.
So they have influence.
Immense influence. Rapid7 needs to proactively enable these FSIs, provide them with compelling co-brandable materials, clear opposize, total cost of ownership, TCO, and return on investment, ROI, calculator specific to federal use cases, conduct joint marketing activities, and offer comprehensive training on the Rapid7 platform. The goal is to reduce the FSI's integration costs and risks associated with recommending Rapid7, make it easy for them to propose Rapid7 in bids, and ultimately help them win follow-on contracts by demonstrating superior security outcomes for their federal clients using the Rapid7 platform.
Make it a win-win for the integrator.
Exactly. Then there's the primary channel partner, Carahsoft Technology Corp. They are the dominant master government aggregator. Their role is essential for ensuring Rapid7 is easily accessible and properly listed on all the relevant government-wide acquisition contracts, or GDOCs, things like GSA MAS, NASA SUPV, Army ITES, SW2. The strategy here involves deep collaboration on joint demand generation activities. Think targeted webinars, executive roundtables, marketing campaigns specifically aimed at decision makers within DHS and DOJ and other target agencies. Carahsoft provides the reach and contract vehicles.
Got it. Leverage the channel.
And finally, don't forget technology alliance partners. Think ServiceNow for ITSM integration, maybe Splunk if an agency insists on keeping it for SIEM, Rapid7 integrates tightly, and crucially, the major cloud service providers like AWS and Azure. These partnerships strengthen Rapid7's case significantly by demonstrating seamless integration into the agency's existing technology ecosystem. Showcasing how the Rapid7 platform fits effortlessly into their current investments is a powerful selling point. Joint case studies featuring successful integrations or co-recommendations from the CSP's government cloud teams can significantly bolster adoption by providing that crucial third-party validation and reducing any perceived integration risk for the agency. #tag tag outro.
Wow. Okay, so as we bring this really deep dive to a close, it feels incredibly clear. We've uncovered, I think, the critical reasons why Rapid7's InsightGovCloud platform isn't just, you know, another strong contender in the federal market. It really seems positioned as a strategic imperative for agencies like DHS, DOJ, and other federal civilian organizations facing today's realities. From navigating these complex, constantly evolving nation-state and criminal threats, to actually operationalizing those stringent real-world mandates like Zero Trust and CDM, Rapid7 appears to offer a truly unified, mandate-first, and genuinely force-multiplying solution. Its ability to simplify operations, automate critical workflows, and intelligently prioritize risk to bring genuine measurable risk reduction to the forefront seems absolutely key to achieving that crucial speed to mission in an era where, honestly, every second counts.
Indeed. And given the relentless pace of cyber threats we see every day, and the government's clear, unequivocal directive now for operational resilience and proactive security, not just compliance, the fundamental question for federal agencies, I think, is no longer if they need an integrated, automated security platform like this. Instead, the question really becomes, how long can they truly afford to wait before embracing a solution that moves them beyond simply checking compliance boxes towards genuinely reducing mission-critical risk and actually accelerating their ability to protect our nation and serve its citizens? What stands out to you, our listener, after hearing all this as the most compelling reason for that necessary change?
That is a powerful thought to leave with, and one that every federal agency leader, every security professional, really needs to ponder deeply. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you feel truly well-informed and empowered by this discussion.